Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on a Monday. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. It's one thing, we talk about sponsorships on shows. It's always very important for me when I sit here and do these personal endorsements. It's with people I really believe in. Well, it's easy to believe in the Purdy's. Very easy. Just like it's very easy to believe in the great people at Sunbury Motors. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And it's been a very, very interesting sports day. Very interesting sports day. Because of the Pete Rose news, which is... Pete Rose is going to push any button anytime when you bring it up as a topic on a show or in some sort of forum. He is going to bring about specific and emotional opinions about whether or not he should be in baseball's Hall of Fame, whether or not he should have any role in Major League Baseball. And ironically, this year, baseball's All-Star Game will be in Cincinnati. And he will have a role in it. And if you recall back in Atlanta, when they did the Team of the Century, presented by MasterCard, he was a part of the All-Century team because it was, yes, Major League Baseball recognized it, but it was done through sponsorship. So people could vote for whomever. Rose made the team. And when he was introduced, who received the second loudest ovation of the night? Second only to Hank Aaron, since it was in Atlanta. And that was Pete Rose. Well, now, outside the lines, which for the most part does a really good job journalistically, for the most part, they're not perfect, but for the most part, they evidently now have been able to get their hands on evidence that showed that Rose bet as a player. And the specific evidence was from 84 to 86, and that they do have evidence, at least specific evidence from 86, of Rose betting as a player. That's the big story of the day. Kevin wants to talk about Steeler uniforms. I got it. We'll
not
put
this
that
time.
We'll put that into the after show, which is always a good place to put a lot of the Kevin topics.
No, not this time. You know what? I have defended Pete Rose many times and said it's time to end the ban. This is going to make it really tough to be able to say that anymore. And this is evidence that existed a long time ago. This isn't brand new. This was seized a long time ago, Steve. I'm just wondering why we're finding out now.
Yeah, except it was seized in a case that had nothing to do with Pete Rose.
Yeah, exactly. This had nothing to do with Pete Rose, but this evidence has been around for a long time. We're just hearing about it now, and it really makes you think, how can I actually support this guy and defend it if he continually says he hasn't, and this evidence does not look good in his case. It doesn't look good at all, and Fox has to be thinking, do we really want him on the broadcast right now?
Well, the loophole I always came up with when it came to Rose in the Hall of Fame was what I always called the John Wooden loophole. John Wooden is in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield. First of all, as a player, John Wooden was an outstanding All-American guard at Purdue, and he was put into the Basketball Hall of Fame as a player. Well, then later, John Wooden was put into the Basketball Hall of Fame a second time as a coach for the 10 national championships he won at UCLA. With that in mind, I then came up with what's been my response for years about Pete Rose. The allegations have always been that Pete Rose bet on baseball as a manager, which he now admits he did. He admitted back in 2004, 15 years of denials, that he placed bets on baseball, but insisted it was only as a manager. And I said, well, okay, allow Rose to go into the Hall of Fame. I said, because you're putting him in as a player. You're not putting it. There's no way in the planet anybody's putting Pete Rose in any Hall of Fame as a manager. Nobody is. Rose was actually a decent manager, but not a great manager. But as a player, I said, yeah. I said, you know, separate the two. The one is the manager that's betting on games. You can't put that guy in. The player, according to him, wasn't betting on games, you can. And that's how I've always separated it. Should this be true when it appears it's on track to be true, you can't put him in. It's one thing, for example, say he were involved and the records showed, let's just say, because this was a mail fraud case, say Pete Rose were involved in a non-baseball-related mail fraud case as a player. Just say he was, you know, just as an example. I put him in the Hall of Fame. It has nothing to do with baseball. But this is different. And documents obtained by Outside the Lines at ESPN indicate Rose bet extensively on baseball and on the Cincinnati Reds. And he racked up, and he did this as he was racking up the last hits of his record-smashing career in 86. The documents go beyond the evidence presented in the 1989 Dowd report that led to Rose's banishment and provide the first written record that Rose bet while he was still in the field. John Dowd, and to his credit, everything Dowd has in his report, obviously the man did a very thorough, complete, and accurate job. And Dowd said, quote, this does it. This closes the door. Dowd tried to get this information, by the way, in 89. He heard about it, but he couldn't get the documents. And to this day, you still really can't get the documents. The documents are copies of pages from a notebook seized from the home of former Rose associate Michael Bertolini during a raid by the U.S. Postal Inspection Service in October of 89, nearly 2 months after Rose was declared permanently ineligible by Major League Baseball. Their authenticity has been verified by two people who took part in a raid, which was part of a mail fraud investigation and absolutely unrelated to gambling. For 26 years, the notebook has remained under court-ordered seal and is currently stored in the National Archives New York City office, where officials have declined requests to release it publicly. Rose made a statement through his attorney. Since we submitted the application earlier this year, we committed to Major League Baseball that we would not comment on specific matters relating to reinstatement. I need to maintain that. To be sure, I'm eager to sit down with Rob Manfred to address my entire history, the good and the bad, and my long personal journey since baseball. That meeting likely will come sometime after the All-Star break. Therefore, at this point, it's not appropriate to comment on any specifics. Now, Bertolini's lawyer, Nicholas DeFeese, said his client is not interested in speaking to anyone about the issues. Now, it goes on. Dowd, who reviewed the documents at Outside the Lines' request, said his investigators had tried but failed to obtain Bertolini's records, believing they would be the final piece in their case that Rose was betting with mob-connected bookmakers in New York. Dowd and his team had sworn testimony from bookie Ron Peters, and remember, Peters was certainly out front in this, that Rose bet on the Reds from 84 to 86, but not written documentation. Dowd also had testimony and a recorded phone conversation between Bertolini and another Rose associate, also well known in this case, Paul Jansen, that established that Bertolini had placed bets for Rose, but Dowd never had the kind of documents that could cement that part of the case, especially in the eyes of fans who wanted to see Rose return to Major League Baseball. Now, this is where let's give John Dowd credit on credibility here. He never put any of these allegations in the report. You notice that? He only put in the stuff that he had documentation for, the betting slips and so forth, the phone records from the clubhouse. Okay? I want to make that point clear. I don't have what I need here. I can't put it in the report. That tells you something about what he did and the thoroughness and the professionalism that he about his job. Dowd did say, "We knew that Bertolini recorded the bets and that he bet himself, but we never had his records. We tried to get them. He refused to give them to us," Dowd said. "This is the final piece of the puzzle on a New York betting operation with organized crime and, of course, Rose betting while he was a player. The documents obtained by Outside the Lines at ESPN reflect betting records from March through July of 1986. They show no evidence that Rose, who was a player manager in 86, bet against his team. There's no evidence he bet against them. They provide, though, a very vivid snapshot of how extensive Rose's betting life was in 1986. Listen to this. In the time covered in the notebook from March through July, Rose bet on at least one Major League Baseball team on 30 different days. It's impossible to count the exact number of times he bet on baseball because not every day's entries are legible. But he did bet on at least one Major League Baseball team on 30 different days. In 21 of those days, regardless of the sport, the bets were for $2,000. The largest single bet was basketball, $5,500 on the Celtics, a bet that he lost. Now, do you realize in 1986 how hard it was to lose a bet on the Celtics? Okay? That team would have crushed either one of the two teams you watched last week. Rose bet heavily on college and professional basketball, losing $15,400 on one day in March. That came during the worst week of the four-month span. Rose in that week lost $25,500. More on the notebook in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com, proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Go on, take the money and run. Go on, take the money and run.
Kevin Hurth theme song rolls on. Great to have you with us.
Actually, I think I bet better than Pete Rose does.
Well, I will be honest with you on that. I know what you what racing you do, and
sometimes and on casinos. Horses. And the casino.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's totally different than what I tell my class. I tell my class in no uncertain terms that I strongly, strongly advise them to never bet on a game that they're doing.
No. Because that'll taint the way you call the game, let alone the way we're talking here with playing or managing it.
Right. And that cuts both ways. Hey, they're winning big. You're euphoric beyond words and unrealistic. They're losing and you are mad. And you should never do any broadcast when you're mad. And that's why I talk a lot more than Kevin does.
Because I'm always mad?
Oh, you are the angry soul. Now, back to Rose. John Dowd, the investigator who put together the report, said he wished he'd had the Bertolini notebook in 1989, but he didn't need it to justify Rose's management. Quite simply, they had everything they needed. And that's because under Rule 21, quote, any player, umpire, or club official, or league official, or employee who shall bet any sum whatsoever upon any baseball game in connection with which the bettor has a duty to perform shall be declared permanently ineligible. Okay? So they had what they needed on that. I mean, you look at the evidence is overwhelming. And Rose then, 15 years later, says, yeah. And he says, yeah, probably we're right. So, all right. But Rose's supporters have long based their case for his reinstatement on the claim that he never bet while he was a player or against his team, that's bogus, by the way. All right. The betting for your team as the manager. Any of you out there who have ever claimed, well, he bet for his team, you don't get it. Okay? You flat out don't get it. All right? You can bet for your team all you want. See, you want them to win. Okay. All right. So you're going to play games with athletes in order for you to win your bet that night. Good example. Rob Dibble probably would have been his relief pitcher at this time. We had Rob on the show last year. I've used Rob Dibble 3 straight nights. As the manager, I'm not going to pitch him a 4th night. I'm not going to do it because I'm not just managing a game. I'm not just managing a moment. I'm managing a season. But you know what? I've got money on tonight's game. I need to win. So for the 4th straight night, I'm putting Rob Dibble in there. Oh, and by the way, after 4 straight nights of use, right, suddenly he's not feeling so great. Suddenly maybe in August or whatever, he's got to go into the stable. See what I'm talking about here? You start playing games when you can't manage with a clear head. And you now are putting some careers maybe in danger because you're now managing in a different way. You're now overusing players. That's why I've always laughed so much at the, but he bet on his team. Like, you don't get it. You know, your job as the manager is to manage the game, manage the moment, manage the season, and not put careers in jeopardy. That's why you have pitch counts. And in order for you to win money and you bet 3 straight nights and you use the same relief pitcher all 3 nights after you use them 3 other nights, what are you doing at that point? That's why it's wrong. It's dead wrong.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Oh, Mark, that was a good one.
I'm slightly insulted by that promotional announcement.
Why?
I believe that was directed at my sports favorite things to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think Mark gets it. See, that's one thing you'll find. We have a good time at this station. We really do. And I mean, I got to give him credit. That's the best one he's done yet. And that was in response to my comment on Raucous this morning, correct?
Yes, I believe that I'm sure it was.
I loved it. Mark, good job. The story about Pete Rose, and this continues to be, it's always going to bring up emotion one way or the other. Look, the guy had 4,256 hits, I think. I think I'm accurate with that number. You can look it up. I think he had 4,256 hits in his career. Nobody is even close. Now, the Dowd report. Now, Dowd says he wished he had Bertolini's notebook in 89, but didn't need it. Rose's supporters, of course, have based their case on reinstatement on the claim that he never bet while he was a player. Legitimate. And that he didn't bet against his team. Not legitimate. That's not even remotely legitimate. If you think that's an argument, then you don't get the job of a manager. You flat out don't get it at all. But part of your job at being a manager is to put your players in the best position to succeed. That's part of the job, okay? Putting your interests above their interests, putting your livelihood above their careers is wrong. I want you to remember that, Kevin. The Little League team you got there, morale coach.
I never bet on the Little League team, and I never bet against them either.
Seen him play. I don't blame you.
It's a very volatile. It's a very volatile sport at that level. You're not quite sure which team's showing up anyway, even if you could bet on them.
Yes. Dowd says the rule says if you bet, it doesn't say for or against. It's another device by Pete to try and excuse what he did. But when he bet, he was gone. He placed his financial interest ahead of the Reds. Period. That's absolutely correct. Now, there's no disputing that. No, again, if you want to say, but he bet on his team. I don't care. I don't care. I'm a relief pitcher. Okay? You used me four straight nights. I've already thrown 100 pitches this week, and you need me one more time? When really I need a day off, like don't throw, don't do anything, and you throw me out there because you got money in the game. And all of a sudden, a week later, I got a tired arm, and I don't know what's going to go on here.
Now, Tony gave us a message, too, and this was a question that I was pretty sure I knew the answer to, but has it ever been proven or alleged that Pete bet against the Reds while being a player or manager?
No.
And his point was, if he did, who in the world would ever take that bet? Because he would have control of that game to win or lose.
Yeah, but here's the issue. Let's give you a hypothetical. And the answer to the question is no. And it's spelled out here. It's spelled out that there is no evidence at all that he bet against the Reds. None. Zero. But what happens if you, through the course of this, let's give a hypothetical, and you're betting and you're losing and you're betting and you're losing and you fall behind. And they come to you and they say, do you want to wipe out your debt? And you're like, yeah, I'd love to wipe out my debt. Here's what you need to do. Okay? You're not going to win tonight. And you're playing. This is you as the player. Okay? You're not going to win tonight. Key ground ball, couldn't quite get to it, goes under your glove. Base is loaded, you strike out. Not in the realm of possibility, it happens all the time. See, that's where I bet on my team to win, bet them to win, bet them to win, bet them to win. But in all the other gambling I'm doing, I fall behind. See, now they've got you. You are now under the control of the people you owe money to. That's where the issue comes up, where they can potentially tell you, hey, as I've documented before, and I'll document a little bit later in the show, I did a game that was where the fix was in. I did a basketball game, and I'll document that for you in a little bit. You know, it's a story people have heard before, but it bears repeating in this as to how you can do it. Let's see. Major League Baseball officials declined comment on the notebook. In April, Rose repeated his denial, this time on Michael Kay's ESPN New York 98.7 FM radio show, that he bet on baseball while he was a player. Never bet as a player. That's a fact, he said. ESPN's Outside the Lines tracked down two of the postal inspectors who conducted the raid on Bertolini's home, or Bertolini's home, my apologies, in 1989, and asked them to review the documents. Both agents, former supervisor Craig Barney and former inspector Mary Flynn, said the records were indeed copies of the notebook they seized. When the case began, it didn't look particularly enticing, Barney said. The postal inspector's office in Brooklyn had received a complaint that a man in Staten Island had failed to return goods to paying customers that he was supposed to have autographed. The man's name was Michael Bertolini, and the business he ran out of his home was called Hit King Marketing, Inc. It was a mere failure to render services complaint, said Barney, who is now retired. We didn't know anything about Bertolini, and we didn't know he had any connection to Pete Rose. If the accusation was true, it would constitute mail fraud, but the agents had no probable cause to search Bertolini's house. Barney sent an agent to drive by the address. When they did, they saw a for sale sign out front. So Barney and Flynn, posing as a couple, looking for a home, called a real estate agent and were given a guided tour of Bertolini's house. It was such a mess, there was stuff everywhere, Barney said. Bats, balls, books, papers were scattered all over. It looked to them as if Bertolini had been signing memorabilia with forged names of some of the most famous baseball players in history. Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Duke Snyder, Mike Schmidt, and Pete Rose. It reeked of fraud, Barney said. The two inspectors spotted an item that a complainant had said had not been returned. That then gave them probable cause to seek a search warrant. So on October 13th, a few days after the undercover house tour, and after obtaining a search warrant, they searched Bertolini's home and found evidence that would lead to numerous convictions. But one item stood out. In a box of papers in the basement, Barney said, was a spiral notebook filled with handwritten entries. It was immediately clear that many notations of Pete in capital letters in the pages represented Pete Rose. There were numbers and dates, he said. It was a book for sports betting. I was taken aback. Mary Flynn, who said her first reaction was, "Holy mackerel," that's her quote, said they asked Bertolini about the notebook. He wasn't forthcoming with much information, she said, but he did acknowledge to me that it was records of bets he made for Pete Rose. Bertolini offered his take on the raid during his sentencing hearing in a U.S. district court in Brooklyn 6 years later. He, by the way, served 14 months for tax fraud and a concurrent assault sentence. He said, I got a call at a place where I was working at the time for my brother, and he says, you should come home. There are a bunch of government people here, and they're here for you. At the time, I think it was Mary Flynn of the postal inspector's office who got on the phone and said, we're here, and she told me why and so forth. They took any records I had whatsoever, and they took different personal belongings and memorabilia from my home. Although the 1989 raid on Bertolini's house received immediate news coverage, nothing about a betting book was made public for 5 years. After Bertolini pleaded guilty and received a federal prison sentence, Sports Illustrated, the New York Times, ESPN, and other news organizations filed Freedom of Information requests with the U.S. Attorney's Office seeking access to the book. All of them were denied on the grounds that the notebook had been introduced as a grand jury exhibit and contained information concerning third parties who were not of investigative interest. And let's face it, Pete Rose is not going to be of investigative interest in this case because it's a mail fraud case. Last year, ESPN's Outside the Lines again applied unsuccessfully for access to the notebook, but learned it had been transferred to the National Archives under a civil action titled United States versus One Executive Tool Spiral Notebook. Two small boxes and other items confiscated in the postal raid on Bertolini's house went to, including autographed baseballs and baseball cards. In April, Outside the Lines examined the Bertolini memorabilia kept in the National Archives New York office, but the betting book, held apart from everything else, was off limits. The U.S. Attorney's Office internal memorandum from 2000 that requested the spiral notebook's transfer said Bertolini's closed file has sufficient historical or other value to warrant its continued preservation by the United States government. The memorandum listed among its attachments a copy of the notebook, but a copy of the memorandum provided by the National Archives had no attachment and did have a section redacted. I wish I'd been able to use that book all these years after he was denying he bet on baseball, said Flynn. She said it in no uncertain terms. Quote, he's a liar. To Dowd, one of the most compelling elements of the newly uncovered evidence is that it supports the charge that Rose was betting with mob-connected bookies through Bertolini. Dowd's investigation had established that Rose was hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt at the time he was banished from baseball. Bertolini nails down the connection to organized crime on Long Island and New York, and it's a very powerful problem, Dowd said. Ron Peters is a golf pro, so he's got another occupation. But the boys in New York, they break arms and knees. The implications for baseball are terrible. The mob had a mortgage on Pete Rose while he was a player and a manager, according to John Dowd. That's why it's serious. Evidence like this is... He hasn't been in the Hall of Fame, nor is he. He's never going to get there. There's no way Rob Manfred says yes now. There's no way.
I think there was a shot before this, but not now.
Well, again, the way you could have justified it would be, look, he would not be going in as a manager. He'd be going in as a player. And he never would have gone in as a manager to begin with. Right? So, I mean, that makes it an easy call. The one thing that you need to do in sports is at its zenith right now of popularity. People watching on TV, record ratings, great crowds. And sports right now is at its height. NBA record ratings, NHL record ratings, NFL Super Bowl record ratings. U.S. Open did really well on Fox. There's an unpredictability about it, a theater about it, an ability to root for something or root against something. Get passionate, have fun about it. You play fantasy sports. So even games that you're not really interested in, now you're interested to see if you're gaining points with your players. So you got a lot of this going on. Fantasy baseball, fantasy football. Let's face it, people wagering on games all over the lot. Las Vegas. Legal. But you need to avoid the thought that what you're watching is not real or fixed. Remember the argument I made about 2 months ago around the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, that ESPN had done a segment where Michelle Beadle interviewed somebody about professional wrestling. And I said, well, that's fine, but I really, if I were ESPN, I would strongly discourage them doing anything on professional wrestling on SportsCenter. If they want to carry professional wrestling as an entertainment part of ESPN, go ahead. But everyone knows it's scripted. So do I want to be doing stories on something that's scripted? No. At least they admit it. So when you have Tim Donaghy, the former NBA referee, the NBA gets all bent out of shape, and justifiably so. If I were David Stern at the time, I'd be bent out of shape. What do you mean you got a referee involved in a gambling scheme? What do you mean? Okay. I'm Rob Manfred, and before that, at this time it would have been Bart Giamatti, Faye Vincent. And Bart Giamatti gets a report that there's nothing you can do. It's like Pete Rozelle suspended Paul Hornung and Alex Karras for a year in 1962. Now, they bet on the Packers and the Lions to win. But they got suspended for a year, and they should be, because you can't have any stain of impropriety hanging over you. You just can't. You have to have people look at something and believe that what you're seeing is their best effort and it went great that day or it didn't go well that day. We'll come back more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. You better bet your life. Ever see the movie Goodfellas?
Yes.
Well, it's a true story, obviously. And there is a mild reference in there to gambling. And remember Maury? The guy that you continue to, they keep trying to get money out of Jimmy? Well, he keeps talking about, I bet on this game, I bet on that game, and so on and so forth. That's legitimate. And that's because Henry Hill, played in the movie by Ray Liotta, was involved in the Boston College basketball point-shaving scandal. What happened was Hill remember in the movie, Hill has a drug connection in Pittsburgh. Remember, that's how he's making money. Well, through his Pittsburgh connection, he sets up a point-shaving scheme that got Boston College Center Rick Kuhn to participate, and Kuhn was able to get a couple of his teammates to join the scheme. And Hill also claimed he had an NBA referee in his pocket working games at the Garden in the 70s. And that's, again, the referee had incurred, guess what, gambling debts on horse races, and that's how they were able to do it. But the huge Boston College basketball point-shaving scandal, Henry Hill, profiled in Goodfellas, is the one he was the one profiled in the movie. It's all about him. Well, he was directly and deeply linked with the Boston College point shaving scandal, and it's briefly referenced in the movie. You didn't know that, did you? So it was a huge scandal then. And, of course, there's Northwestern basketball, which to this day, somebody at the Big Ten has got to explain to me why nothing ever happened to Northwestern. I'll never understand that.